Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. There was nothing random in the deadly attack in Orlando. The massacre came to a gay nightclub, Pulse, a popular gathering spot for gay Latinos. Omar Mateen condemned many to death in the worst massacre of its kind in American history. Today, we talk with members of the LGBT community about the meaning of these attacks to them. This hour On Point, the LGBT response to Orlando. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you make of this targeting, this time, this place? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Monday on CNN, Anderson Cooper talked with Norman Cassiano, a survivor of the Orlando nightclub shooting. He was shot twice, released from the hospital. He told Cooper what happened in the bathroom where some were trying to take cover in a stall in the bathroom of the Pulse nightclub when Omar Mateen came in with his gun.
We start yelling again, please, please don't shoot. There's people in the background just begging him, like, please, please don't shoot. Like, we haven't seen your face. We don't know what you look like. You haven't spoken. We don't know anything. Just please let us go. Like, don't do this. And I guess that just, like I said, I guess it like enticed him to do it more. And he put his hand over the stall and just free shot.
Just free shot. And of course, 49 dead and 53 wounded. And it was a targeted massacre. With us now from New York is Dominic Holden, national LGBT reporter for BuzzFeed News. Earlier this week, he was in Orlando covering the shooting at the Pulse nightclub. You can link to Dominic's reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. Dominic Holden, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
With us from Orlando is Carlos Guillermo Smith, a government affairs manager for Equality Florida, the statewide LGBT rights organization. He's Latino, member of the LGBT community. Carlos, welcome to On Point. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And from New York, Miriam Soyla Perez joins us, queer Cuban-American writer and activist, gender columnist for Color Lines. She's co-host of the podcast Radio Menea. Her essay about Orlando was headlined, "When the One Place That Feels Like Home Is Invaded." You can link to that at our website as well. Miriam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Dominic, you were down early in the week focusing your reporting on Orlando and the impact on the gay and lesbian community there, the LGBT community, and the response that you saw. Give us a sense of what you witnessed in the aftermath of this terrible night, Dominic.
I arrived in Orlando about 10 hours after the shooting, and people were reeling, of course, and they were afraid. They wanted very much to be together. Number of people had convened at the LGBT center, and later in the evening they got together at LGBT bars. You know, they were shocked. They were also waiting on the names of the people who had been killed. It is a small LGBT community. It is tightly knit, and people knew that they would know somebody who was either killed or wounded. But without the names, there was this hanging over their head that this was going to come out. The big question for a lot of people at that time was this question of safety. How could these spaces that they had been to, these bars, these community centers, feel safe again? They knew that they didn't want to hide, but they weren't sure what they wanted to do. And it seems that as the week has gone on and people have found their friends and loved ones who have been killed, they have grieved, but they've also wanted to take some sort of action. There were about 50 LGBT organizations that yesterday announced that they were taking a position for gun control, saying that terror suspects or people who had been convicted of hate crimes should not be allowed to buy guns, that there should be expanded criminal background checks. And just today, the Human Rights Campaign, the largest LGBT organization in the country, announced a position that they were advocating for limiting the access to these high-powered assault rifles and expanding background checks. And for just a little bit of context, the LGBT movement has always fought for its existence and it's for its survival, from pushing out police raids in bars in the 60s mm-hmm. to the AIDS epidemic when LGBT activists fought for drugs to treat HIV and for them to be released to people. Now it seems that the LGBT movement is saying that the existence of people like them and their right to live out and publicly depends on making sure that people don't have the ability to bring these high-powered weapons into their safe spaces.
Carlos Guillermo Smith, in Orlando, I mean, there have been so many angles that people are focusing on here. ISIS, of course, because Omar Mateen put that right up front. Mental health, because of the issues that he exhibited over time. Gun access, which Dominique's talking about right there. What about just straight up the hate factor here, or the target that is so obvious and so so terrible in the outcome of a gay club? How central do you see that targeting to the incidents of this night?
Well, I think that it is absolutely the reason why this horrific tragedy happened. And that's why it's so important as we're discussing what happened here in Orlando, the unthinkable massacre of 49 of our residents here, many of them LGBTQ, an overwhelming majority of them Latino, that we talk about why this happened. They were targeted, and the gunman intended to send a message of hate against Latino people and against LGBTQ people. And that is at the core of what happened. And we have to make sure that we hold people accountable for some of the ugly and divisive anti-LGBTQ and, frankly, anti-Latino messaging that has transpired in the last several years. Certainly, this is not a recent phenomenon, but has escalated in the recent past. I mean, just right here in Central Florida, if you just take as an example the Liberty Council, which is a hate group as identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which specializes in going after the LGBT community and any governments or municipalities who would dare pass, for example, human rights ordinances. They have sued them. And recently, just a few months ago, when the conversation began or continued about access to restrooms for transgender individuals, the president of the Liberty Council tweeted out that they needed to bring their firearms into the bathroom in case they encountered a transgender person. And it's this type of ugliness and hateful language that nurtures a hatred of LGBT people that cannot be tolerated and has to be called out for what it is immediately.
I mean, of course, Omar Mateen, what he wrote on Facebook was, "Now taste the Islamic State vengeance." And he said, "The real Muslims will never accept the filthy ways of the West." He wasn't citing American politicians there, but you're saying what? The table can be set by attitudes here in this country as well?
Well, absolutely. The reality is that the gunman was a radical American homophobe. That's what he was. He was born here in the United States. He, whatever led to the hatred that he had for LGBTQ people, the hatred he had in his heart, is a message that he heard mostly while living here in the United States. And I don't know exactly how religious he was. We heard that he wasn't very religious from his from his family. We even heard he was not religious at all, which begs the question that in the 11th hour, when he was committing this horrific act of terror against our community, whether his claims to be doing this for ISIS were legitimate, and whether he was doing this out of really just a hatred he personally had in his heart for LGBT people, and some of the connections to that he claims to ISIS or to Islam, I think are highly questionable.
Mayor Perez in New York, if I may, how do you read the targeting of this club, of this community, at the end of this week?
And I think we have to understand this as actually part of a legacy of violence against the LGBT community, but particularly the LGBT Latino community. Obviously, this act in the gravity of it and the enormity of it is different, but it's actually part of a long history of violence, particularly against LGBT people of color, particularly against LGBT trans women of color who are murdered in the streets of the United States every day. I mean, we've had 20 trans women of color who've been murdered since the year began. And so this act has to be seen in that greater context of violence and the context that creates the need for these spaces and also shapes why it's such a horrific violation to have this kind of space be the site of such a tragedy.
I mean, did you think that the day of attacks like this on your community were over, Miriam? You know, we think back to Stonewall and years ago, as Dominic and Carlos say, and now here we are again.
You know, I didn't think that they were over, but I did think that they were have shifted, you know, and that mm-hmm. the targeting has happened more on the level of the people who are more marginalized within our community, particularly around gender identity, mm-hmm. and that, you know, the gay bar as a space was not such a contested place. But, you know, I can't ignore the current violence and recent memory of that. And so, you know, I definitely have enjoyed a lot of freedom as a queer Latina and have felt haven't had to think about my safety in that kind of way. You know, on Thursday night, I was at a queer Latino party in Washington, D.C., just like the party at Pulse celebrating Latino pride. And so on Sunday morning when I saw the news, I felt very clearly like that could have been me and my friend. So it brings the immediacy of this kind of violence directly to me and my community, even within my, you know, relative amount of privilege. And so it shifts things for sure.
Miriam Zoila Perez, Dominic Holden, Carlos Guillermo Smith, please stand by. We're talking with gay and lesbian Americans about the attack in Orlando. Here's the list of names.
Carol Henry, Frank Hernandez, Miguel Angel Honorato, Javier Jorge Reyes, Jason Benjamin Josephat, Eddie Chalmodroy Justice, Anthony Luis Laureano Disla.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with gay and lesbian Americans about the attack, the tragedy in Orlando. Sound right there of thousands marching through the streets of Los Angeles for a gay pride parade on Sunday, just hours after the deadly Orlando shooting. As the news came down, people all over the country and right there at the Gay Pride Parade in L.A. were responding. Here's one attendee reacting to the news with AFP, the news agency.
My reaction to Orlando was I was horrified that something like this would happen on, you know, June of all months at a gay club. It's ridiculous and it's horrifying. And the fact that things like this still happen is ridiculous.
And, of course, not just in Los Angeles. In Washington, D.C., D.C. Pride on Sunday. Sorrow expressed there as well. Here's Alexis Carrington talking with the Washington Post at the Pride Parade.
I was in a state of shock. Like, gay pride is supposed to be a happy time. People were going out having fun. And when you just thought that things were on the up, this happened.
And here's Kieran Lithgow talking with the Post at the same parade in Washington, D.C., Sunday, the morning after the terrible massacre.
We do live in a free country where everybody's love should be respected and everybody's identity should be respected. And don't be afraid to be yourself, and because that's what they want. They want us to go back into hiding, and we can't do that.
We're talking this hour with gay and lesbian Americans about the attack, the tragedy in Orlando, what it means to them and to all of us. You can join us this hour. LGBTQ listeners, what's this killing this week say to you? What's it meant to you? How are you processing the fact that of all the targets in the country, this guy picked a gay nightclub? What does that say? What does that mean? And why this? What do you make of all the support you've seen this week, the heroes, the groundswell? What about the other side, the politicians who wouldn't or couldn't say the words gay club? Dominic Holden is with us, national LGBT reporter at BuzzFeed News. Carlos Guillermo Smith is with us from Equality of Florida, the statewide gay rights organization there. Miriam Zoila Perez is with us from New York today, Cuban-American writer, activist, focused on health and race and gender, columnist at Color Lines, and co-host of the podcast Radio Menea. Forgive me if I'm not getting that translation right, Miriam. We've got callers for the three of you. Chris in Providence, Rhode Island. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
The point was made earlier by one of your guests that we shouldn't, you know, collectively, we shouldn't forget that this, who the targets of this were, which were LGBTQ people, and more specifically, people of color, Latino people in this case, and that federally, there are a lot of important things that we can take out of this, like gun control and things like that. But I guess I just hesitate, and I'll use this word for lack of a better one, although okay. It might be strong, that people are co-opting something like this and not focusing on these people that were the targets of this, that are continually oppressed, and there is violence against and are being killed every day.
What do you mean when you say co-opting, Chris? Co-opting for what?
I guess, like, so taking sort of, like, I appreciate the sentiments of the, you know, the people such as the Connecticut senator who you had on the show that are, their primary focus on this is gun control.
Yes.
Right? And not necessarily on the victims of this shooting, which were LGBTQ people, which is, I don't know. It's like gun control shouldn't eclipse that, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So co-opting might be too strong a word. Maybe appropriating is better. I mean, the worst is someone like Donald Trump who's co-opting or appropriating this to, you know, forward his racist viewpoint. I think in different ways it's being co-opted.
Chris, I've got it, and it's interesting. I mean, let's while we think about that, here's the sound of Donald Trump. This was in New Hampshire on Monday, saying that because, I mean, he said, look, who's the better friend to the gay community, Hillary Clinton or me? And he said that his immigration policies, you call them racist, Chris, would turn out better for this community than her more open policy. Here's Trump.
Ask yourself, who is really the friend of women and the LB and LGBT community? Donald Trump with actions or Hillary Clinton with her words? I will tell you who the better friend is, and someday I believe that will be proven out bigly.
Proven out bigly. Carlos, what about it? Co-opting here? Is that too strong? I mean, we have something new here. 9/11, there were all kinds of people in those towers. San Bernardino, all kinds of people in that center. This was a specific community. Does that mean that it must be divorced from the other issues? Do you see co-opting going on?
Well, let me respond first to the words of Donald Trump, who very ignorantly believes that he can just say that he's for LGBTQ rights and that he's going to get the LGBTQ vote. I've been talking to people down here on the ground, LGBT people, and I'm not talking to anyone who is interested in supporting Donald Trump, who believes that by appointing the most conservative and extreme right-wing Supreme Court justices, that somehow is going to help LGBTQ people in this country. They do not believe that the message that he's promoting, that LGBT people should be turning against our Muslim brothers and sisters in the wake of this tragedy, is something that's productive. In fact, it takes us in the wrong direction. It's toxic and it's insulting and divisive. But as far as co-opting the issue of this attack against Latino and LGBTQ people, I think that there's a way to make sure that we're talking about all of the issues, because yes, the LGBTQ community now has been disproportionately impacted and activated by this tragedy to do something about gun safety. And I think that we are going to be ready to fight back and join a growing coalition that includes Black and African American communities, Latino communities that have been disproportionately impacted by gun violence, specifically here in Florida and in Orlando. But as far as making sure that we talk about the identities of the LGBTQ and Latino victims of this tragedy, it's really, really important, because it gets us back to why this happened, because we need to be creating a dialogue and creating visibility with those who may in some way have been contributing to, again, the nourishment of hate language in the minds of a sick killer like the gunman really was. I'll use one example here in Orlando. A mega church pastor, of a local evangelical church here in Orlando, Joel Hunter, joined us at a LGBTQ and Islamic community press conference on Monday. And he told a reporter there that evangelicals must repent of LGBT oppression. And he's not the only religious leader that I've spoken to and have heard from.
Repent
in the last...
of it. Give it up. Stop it, you're saying.
Exactly. Exactly. He's not the only religious leader who I have seen take giant steps in the right direction of first taking some partial responsibility for the toxic and hateful animosity towards LGBT people that may have led to this, but also developing a path forward to begin to, you know, not necessarily change their religion, because I don't think that they're ready to do that or that they can do that, but they can start sending a message of love and inclusion to the LGBTQ community, that they can welcome us with open arms. And while they may disagree with gay couples being able to marry, for example, just as they, you know, disagree with certain diets and other things, although I think that those are two totally different issues, they can at least reverse the negative and hateful language that has been so toxic, that has taught gay people since we were young, that you know, we've heard a message that gay people shouldn't exist and that we better change, and if we can't change, we better hide, and if we can't hide and something happens, then we deserve it. That's a message that many gay people have heard since they were young, that has caused many to internalize some of the feelings that they have. And it's just, we have to, what good must we make of this? And I think dialogue is important.
Carlos, stand by. I want to play a little more of that Anderson Cooper interview. This was on Tuesday. He was pretty much grilling your attorney general there in Florida, Pam Bondi, whose office spent years appealing a ruling that the state's ban on gay marriage was unconstitutional. And Bondi argued in 2014 that same-sex marriages would impose significant public harm. Here's that Cooper-Bondi exchange.
You've basically gone after gay people, said that in court that gay people, simply by fighting for marriage equality, were trying to do harm to the people of Florida, to induce public harm, I believe was the term you used in court. Do you really think you're a champion of the gay community?
Let me tell you, when I was sworn in as Attorney General, I put my hand on a Bible and was sworn to uphold the Constitution of the state of Florida. That's not a law. That was voted into our state constitution by the voters of Florida. That's what I was defending. Mm-hmm. Had nothing to do. I've never said I don't like gay people. That's
ridiculous.
But you
did say
Cooper wasn't having it and she wasn't conceding. But there have been different tones coming out. Here's Utah's Republican Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox. This was Salt Lake City on Monday at a vigil for the victims of the Orlando attack. And he apologized for the fact that he had sometimes, he said, wasn't kind to gay people in the past, and said that his heart has changed. And then he said it's time for Americans to take a hard look at their reactions to this shooting.
I'm speaking now to the straight community. How did you feel when you heard that 49 people had been gunned down by a self-proclaimed terrorist? That's the easy question. Here's the hard one. Did that feeling change when you found out that the shooting was at a gay bar at 2 a.m. in the morning? If that feeling changed, then we're doing something wrong.
Lots of issues to look at here, but the Utah Lieutenant Governor with a little bit of look in the mirror advice there for some Americans. Sid in Brantford, Connecticut, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling to talk about something that I haven't heard that much, which is, although it's not confirmed, it seems very possible that this shooter was struggling with gay feelings. Mm-hmm. And that, so that I've heard it mentioned that his hatred for gay people, it really could have been self-hatred. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous.
It's okay, it's okay.
It could have been internalized homophobia, which comes from all the anti-gay rhetoric and the culture and religions. And you see also that sometimes anti-gay legislators have been found to have gay relations. And I wanted to just say also that the religion is rigid and shameful of that kind of thing, and that it's very possible that also that beating his wife and shooting could be his attempt to try to be manly and a hero and not weak. But so I think this issue of self-hatred and internalized homophobia would be good to bring into the conversation.
I appreciate your call, Sid. Dominic Holden, you've been reporting on this. How has that played out over the course of this week? Do we know any more about Omar Mateen on this front? I mean, there were early reports of this. Then later, the FBI kind of distancing itself from some of that. What about self-hatred here as a potential element?
There have been bits and pieces of news from people who say that they had interacted with the gunman on gay dating apps. I have yet to see any substantial account that actually shows a profile. Mm-hmm. There are people who say that they had seen him at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. It's based on what I've seen, impossible to determine if he definitely did use those apps or if there was somebody who looked like him who used mm-hmm. those apps. So there's a lot of speculation. The truth of it, though, is that it doesn't really matter at this point what his motivation was for the LGBT community. They're trying to figure out how to respond because, in the end, it was an attack on one of their spaces.
You've written, Miriam, compellingly about the significance of this space to the community. There are spaces like this. I mean, your headline, "When the one place that feels like home is invaded." Unpack that for us, Miriam.
Yeah, I mean, the experience of being queer and being Latino in the U.S. Can be an experience of isolation. It can be very hard for us to find our community, to find our people, to find bars and clubs where we can play the music of our childhoods. And music is really important, particularly in an immigrant context, right? It's one of the ways in which, you know, my parents are from Cuba and left mm-hmm. over 50 years ago, and music has always been a way in which we've connected to our culture and our identity. And so to do that in a space that is also queer-friendly, where I don't have to think about who am I going to dance with and whether someone's going to feel uncomfortable, where I can and experience that sort of joy of being Latina and being queer and neither of those things being questioned is extremely important. And I also think we have to remember that the reason that Latino nights exist is because the larger LGBT community is not always a safe place for Latinos or for people of color. And so we have to find our own nights. And they're usually, you know, in D.C., they're a couple of times a year. And so that joy that I experienced on Thursday night last week at mm-hmm. Latino Pride is not something I get to experience on a regular basis. And so to have that really important moment be so tarnished by this tragedy is just incredibly important. And I do think that there is a co-optation, to go back to Chris's mm-hmm. Call about that if we don't name the specificity of this act, if we don't name that it was a gay club, if we don't name that it was a Latino night, if we don't name that most of the victims were Latino and Black and people of color, that we lose the real context that creates these kinds of acts, and that gun control is one piece of the puzzle, but it's just one small piece of a puzzle that's also about combating racism and transphobia and homophobia and all of the things that foster the need for these spaces and that foster the need for people like me to find these small moments of belonging and of safety in a world that is often not for us.
I mean, it's shocking to see one group targeted here. You know, we've seen broad groups. We've seen Americans targeted. But this is really singling out a community with such terrible bloodshed, Miriam.
Yeah. I mean, it's really horrific. And it's the act of violence in my lifetime that I think has hit closest to home of any of the acts of violence that happen constantly in our society. Unfortunately, it really has hit me and particularly my other friends who are Latino and LGBT really, really close to home.
Miriam Soyla Perez in New York, please stand by there. Her piece, "When the One Place That Feels Like Home is Invaded," you can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Dominic Holden with BuzzFeed News, Carlos Guillermo Smith with Equality Florida. We're going to hear a little more of Representative Nadia Velasquez in New York reading out the names of the dead.
Jean Carlos Mendez Perez, Enrique L. Rios, Jean C. Nieves Rodriguez, Javier Emmanuel Serrano Rosado, Christopher Joseph Sanfeliz, Gilmari Rodriguez Sullivan, Edward Sotomayor Jr.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking this hour with gay and lesbian Americans about the attack, the tragedy in Orlando, what it means to them and to all of us. Dominic Colden with BuzzFeed News. Carlos Guillermo Smith with us from Orlando, Florida, with Equality Florida. Miriam Soila Perez with us from New York, writes for Color Lines, co-host of the podcast Radio Menea. Yesterday, President Obama spoke in Orlando after meeting with families of victims who died in the Pulse nightclub shooting.
Whatever the motivations of the killer, whatever influences led him down the path of violence and terror, whatever propaganda he was consuming from ISIL and Al-Qaeda, this was an act of terrorism, but it was also an act of hate. This was an attack on the LGBT community.
There, as straightforward as you can be by the president. Listeners, you can join us this hour. LGBT listeners, what's this killing this week said to you, meant to you, and how are you processing the fact that all the targets in the country, Omar Mateen picked a gay nightclub? Ken in Portland, Maine. Ken, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks. So I just want to kind of call and give a perspective. I'm actually kind of just in the process of coming out as a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm older. I'm in my 40s.
Okay.
I was married. And, you know, this whole thing and seeing this, the way this was targeted, has done amazing things to scare me back 10 paces.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very scary, scary thing to think that, God, we're really that hated as gay people.
Miriam, what do you say to Ken?
I say, you know, I understand those fears, and I think that the way that we survive and the way that we continue to resist is to be out and to be open and to live our lives without fear and with pride. And I've had those moments this week, and I've just immediately been like, that's just not how I can live my life, and not the way in which our community is going to be able to supersede and survive this tragedy. But I understand those fears, and you know, some of the people who were murdered on Sunday were not out themselves, and they were outed by their obituaries. And it's just, it's a reality of being LGBT in this country that it's not always safe or comfortable to be out and to be open, and that these acts of violence are a part of our reality. But my type of resistance is to be the most myself I can be, and that the closet is not an option and hasn't been one for over a decade for me.
Dominic Holden, I know we have to let you go in a minute, but I want to put a question or a comment from a listener on our website too, if I may. John writes, he says, I agree that anti-gay Americans almost certainly contributed to his, Omar Mateen's, hatred of gays. But then he writes, but don't minimize his religious views as a factor. What about that in a time when we see the rise of ISIS and terrorism on several continents, and you know that there is some tough point of view on homosexuality in some portions of this religious community. How do you think about that, Dominic?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that there are a number of religions that harbor animosity towards LGBT people. I mean, there are parts of the far-right Christian movement in the United States that, literally believes that LGBT people are going to and should burn in hell. Likewise, there are people who are conservative Muslims who oppose people being gay, lesbian, bi, or transgender.
You don't make any distinctions? I mean, I'm looking at – this is a Wall Street Journal piece this week saying, you know, at least 10 predominantly Muslim countries around the world, some of them close U.S. allies, have laws on the books that set a punishment of death for homosexuality.
Right. And I don't think that it is fair to say that the politics of Christian conservatives are identical to countries that put people to death for being gay. At the same time, the nature of those countries' politics and laws and government are very different from the United States. So that would never happen here. I had a conversation with Senator Marco Rubio earlier this week. And one of the things he said was that he believes that this club was targeted because this individual didn't just want to kill Americans, but wanted specifically to kill LGBT Americans. I followed up with him this issue that has come up in this conversation and many LGBT advocates have raised, this concern that anti-LGBT rhetoric among political leaders in the United States contributes to this sense that LGBT people are second-class citizens and that they can be treated differently or even targeted for violence. And he drew a distinction there. He said, look, terrorism and ISIS throwing gay people off of buildings is completely different from a conversation about gay marriage or LGBT rights. So, you know, I think that there is obviously a difference between, you know, what is happening generally in this country and other places. But we don't know that much about the religious ideology of this person. The FBI had looked into his background, and at times he had conflicting viewpoints about different groups that identify as Muslim. So, you know, this could be a person who is largely unstable, is clinging to whatever ideology seems convenient at the time. And if that is the case, there could be bits and pieces of anti-LGBT rhetoric from ISIS and anti-LGBT rhetoric that's right here in the United States.
Dominic Holden, yeah. National LGBT reporter at BuzzFeed News. It's always great to have you, Dominic. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Let me get another call here. Joe in Charlestown, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say real quick, I'm a gay individual myself. I think it's a little foolhardy to compare the level of hatred, for lack of a better term, in the United States against the LGBT community with that of something like the Islamic State or, you know, other Mideastern countries that hold these, you know, death penalty views, as you just mentioned. I don't even think it's on the same page, to tell you the truth. I think in the United States, there's a middle ground, right? You don't have to force your view on somebody, but you don't have to pat them on the back for it either. I think with the Islamic State, there is no middle ground. They call for the death of us and killing us all over the world for, you know, whatever reason it is. I think it's taking a right-wing Christian in the United States and comparing him to an Islamic State member and having the same views is a little bit unfair. So that was my comment.
I appreciate your perspective, Joe. Thank you very much for calling. Miriam Sola Perez, Carlos Guillermo Smith, please stand by. I want to welcome also into our conversation right now Richard Kim, executive editor at The Nation. He wrote a piece about Orlando headline, Please Don't Stop the Music. Richard Kim, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
How are you balancing all the vectors that go through the Pulse nightclub here, the terror vector, the mental health issue, the gun conversation in this country, and then the apparent hate crime characteristic of this. And in particular, I don't know if you just heard our caller there saying, wait a minute, let's not look away from some cultural background that makes the Muslim affiliation here unnerving to him.
Yeah, you know, this is a lot to process. It was a very difficult week, just looking at the profiles and of all the people that were killed. And
yeah.
As information came out about Omar Martin, really processing what the variety of motives inspirations were there for him. You know, the thing that I keep returning to and that I'm really focused on now is that there have been over a thousand mass shootings in the United States since the Newtown tragedy in 2012. And the common denominator in all of them is guns. There are many, many, many violent ideologies that killers can latch onto. Radical Islam is one of them. So is right-wing Christianity. So is white supremacy. Many, many mass shootings have no ideological purpose whatsoever. But for me,
and that definition is like when there are more than three people killed, or three or more, or something like that.
Four,
the thousand.
I think the definition.
Four.
Technically, four or more, not including the
wow.
shooter. And,
yeah,
and so, you know, the common denominator in all of this is the presence of guns. And, you know, I think gay and lesbian people are issuing a very powerful call to their fellow LGBT people to join the gun control movement and to bring our special history and skills to that movement, our history of resistance and direct action to this movement to pass gun control.
Do you think that can make a difference if this community swings in behind that effort in a focused way, Richard?
You know, my friend Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum, who is the leader of the largest LGBT Jewish community here in New York, wrote an op-ed for us calling on gays to join the movement. And she noted two things. You know, one is that as LGBT people, we are disproportionately targeted by violence. Young people are disproportionately harmed by guns. Women are disproportionately harmed by guns. And so we have a duty to our community to really put our foot forward in this issue. And then, you know, I do think the gun control movement really needs a more radical front. It's stunning to me that none of the three major gun control groups in the United States right now actually has a position on an assault weapons ban. That is insane to me. And I think, you know, gays and lesbians, we have fought really tough battles, and we have shifted public opinion, and we have done that through our telling our stories, but also taking direct action when necessary. And I do think that that history and that militant approach is really needed today.
Stephanie in Suffolk, Virginia. Stephanie, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, thanks. Hi, Tom. I first want to send out my condolences to anybody who's experienced the loss this week. And for those who have renewed fears, I think it's horrible that that's happened. I am not part of the community. However, I know people. And one of the things that a previous caller said something about the self-hatred within the shooter, and it was actually talked about on an earlier show this week. Some journalists and writers have talked about Al-Qaeda leaders and other militant Muslim leaders who have had sexual identity issues that they've proven and actually written about in some books. Hmm. And to me, I know it's been touched on several times, but it seems to me that this horrific monster, had some very big self-hatred issues. And it breaks my heart that he took people with him. But I feel like it was almost, you know, he had to have this big show of something so that he would prove to Allah, which someone said earlier, that he was a man. But, you know, obviously he's a very ill person. But I think that some more will come out in this in the future. Like I said, there was a woman earlier who talked about writing about a very large Al-Qaeda leader, big in the movement, that they've proven had some of the same issues. So
everybody trying to figure out exactly the mix here, and you may be onto something with that observation. But then, who knows if we'll ever know? I mean, Miriam, we've now got the Senate chair of the Homeland Security Committee asking Facebook to release everything that they have from Omar Mateen. Is that important to you, Miriam, to know more about his psyche or not? Is it? Yeah. I mean, the people are dead.
Yeah, to be honest, no, it's not important to me. And I think it's a distraction from both the victims who were murdered and also the reality of the community that was targeted in the United States. We can't make sense of a senseless act of violence. And I also, it's really important to me and people in my community that this not be used as fuel for the sort of war on terror and increased militarization. And I was really upset to see the comments of the presidential candidates post this this tragedy that might be used as fuel for a fire of a war that I don't think we know has any potential for really changing the context of this violence. And those kinds of wars have fueled the displacement that has brought immigrants, like some of the immigrants in the Pulse nightclub, to the United States. And so I don't want my community's tragedy to be used as fuel for more war on terror. And so for me, the focus is on what is the reality of the lived reality of LGBTQ Latinos and other people who face this tragedy, and what are the day-to-day lived realities that my community faces, and how can we shift those realities that even beyond Sunday night, constant violence, targeting, worries about safety. We have to talk about immigration and the ways in which immigrants are treated in this country. Many of the people were from Puerto Rico. The reason that they're leaving Puerto Rico has to do with colonialism and the relationship between Puerto Rico and the United States. So there's just so many levels that are more important to me around the realities of the community that's been targeted than trying to understand the mind of someone who is clearly very disturbed.
Richard Kim, how do you think we're going to look at this over time? As an epic terror attack? As a major attack on the LGBT community, I mean, the president says this is both, but you know how things work in history. They don't often settle down into multiple categories. They tend to settle down into one, right or wrong.
Yeah, you know, I do think this will go down in history as an attack specifically on LGBT people. It's not the first one. There have been attacks on gay bars throughout our history. This is certainly the gravest of them. I hope it goes down in history also as a turning point when we, as a public, as a nation, decide that we must send a loving message to the LGBT community and really affirm that. I think we've seen some of that by our political and spiritual leaders this week. And I also hope that it's a turning point in the battle for gun control.
We hear that. Carlos, do you think this may change Florida politics? It's been a tough arena for, there's been straight up gay bashing in Florida politics. Do you think this might help turn away from that?
Well, I think what we need to do is we need to think about what we can be doing. That's one of the things. But the first thing that I want your listeners to make sure that they know about how they can help is Equality Florida set up a GoFundMe account that has shattered all records on the website for this type of giving. We've raised $5.1 million. 100% of those proceeds and that money is going to be going towards the survivors of the victims and the families who really, really need it right now. And they can really help by going to GoFundMe.com. The other thing, as far as Florida politics go, we need to demand fully inclusive anti-discrimination laws that fully protect LGBT people in Florida. We need to have it. We need politicians like Pam Bondi to stop paying lip service to LGBT people and actually call on other leaders to help our community and move forward from this tragedy. And of course, we need to demand that they get their heads out of the sand and out of the pockets of the NRA and do something on gun safety and save us from this gun violence right now in Florida.
Carlos, we're up against the clock right there. Carlos Guillermo-Smith with Equality Florida, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Miriam Soyla Perez, gender columnist at Color Lines. Miriam, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And Richard Kim at The Nation. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Tom.
A little more of a tribute from two Orlando victims from London's Gay Men's Chorus, Bridge Over Troubled Water. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I will comfort you. I'll comfort you.